And one of the most important things is that sort of family intergenerational success and wealth planning that is a critical component to our business, right? So it's making sure that we understand our family's goals, objectives, what they want to do for their kids, for their grandkids, what they want their impact to be, what they want their legacy to be.
This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, brought to you by Gold Rock Capital. Each week, we look at how high net worth families can improve their lives, decisions, and investments in a deeply uncertain world. We always aim to provide practical information, even if we can't offer specific investment advice. This is the Definitely Uncertain podcast, and my name is Darren Rockman, and I'm a partner at Gold Rock Capital, the more than 20-year-old multifamily office servicing high net worth families in Israel and around the world. And today, this is truly a special treat. I have with me Ida Lu, who is the head, the global head of Citi Private Bank, where she leads private banking activities over 20 countries and 52 offices. Hi, Ida. Thank you for joining.
Darren, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
It is an honor and a pleasure for us, for sure. Ida and I first met each other last year in Washington, D.C., and she's also on her way to visit us here in Israel shortly. So that's really exciting. So I actually would like to start with your history, because it's not the typical history of a private banker or a family office person. So I'd like to know, tell us your story and then tell us how it informs what you do heading up Citi's private bank.
Well, thank you, Darren. I think you said it very well that it's an unconventional career path. I started my career in investment banking. I did 7 years of mergers and acquisitions investment banking, half of that time here in New York, the other half in Asia, out of Hong Kong, working on China, Taiwan, and Southeast Asia, telecom, media, and tech deal. And after that period in investment banking, I had a question in the back of my mind if I should pivot industries, because quite candidly, Darren, I was really burnt out. I mean, this was back in the day where working 100 plus hours every week, you know, an all-nighter was pretty typical. And, you know, I worked my way straight on up without taking a break there in investment banking. So I wanted to do something a little bit different. And out of college, I had two offers, Darren. One was to be a fashion buyer, and the other was to be an investment banker. And you can imagine what I was thinking at that time. Maybe I should have gone into the fashion industry.
That's right.
So I did take a pivot back, and I leveraged some of the connections that I made when I did my internship with Neiman Marcus Group way back in college. And I met some fabulous designers, and I ended up working for a world-class fashion designer, women's wear designer, Vivian Tam. And I ran her businesses globally. I opened up her stores in China, in Beijing, in Shanghai. We opened up her markets in Europe and the like. And we had a really wonderful time together collaborating, building the business, launching new lines and strategic opportunities for her. But while I was in the fashion industry, every fashion designer that I would meet would ask me, what stock should I buy? What bond should I buy? Where should I invest my money? And I would say, wait, no, hold on. No, I did investment banking. I did corporate advisory.
Don't ask me.
Wealth management. But nonetheless, it made me realize that there was a massive void in the marketplace for wealth management solutions to the fashion industry. So I pitched the concept to Citi Private Bank 16 years ago to launch and lead the fashion, retail, and entertainment practice. And the rest is history. So I was able to combine what I think is the best of both worlds on the wealth management platform. And then in 2011, I had another sort of aha moment. I was recognizing how much wealth was coming out of Asia. And as you may know, Citi has been on the ground in Asia for over half of our existence. So 120 years on the ground in the region, super relationships with the families there. But we weren't capturing the global flows, you know, as their family members were moving around the world. And I spotted an opportunity to launch the Mega Wealth Asian Clients Practice in 2011. And that was to ensure that we were capturing the holistic family wealth around the world for our Asian clients. And then was promoted to running New York and promoted to running North America. And now have the wonderful privilege of being the global head of the private bank here at Citi for just over 2 years. So that's my journey, a little bit unusual, Darren, as you say, but I think very interesting in that I got the fundamentals of financial modeling valuation down pat. I got the operating experience of running a small private company, and I have the wealth management experience now, and most especially the privilege of working with large families around the world and helping them solve their complex needs.
Right. And that it is a super interesting career path. And you know, as you say, the rest is history. What did you take away, both in terms of leadership style and working with clients, from your experience working in a family operating business? Because, you know, a lot of people in the wealth management world just come, you know, come out of banking or an equities desk. You've seen, you know, what it's like actually to run a business like that.
I absolutely have. And, you know, one of the reasons why we were successful in launching the fashion retail and entertainment practice for Citi is because we had a deep understanding of what it was like to be an owner, to be a fashion designer, to be a creative, to start your own company. What were the challenges that each of them were facing as they were thinking about their global business expansion, top line revenue growth, managing expenses, the margins that they were trying to maintain in the business? And Darren, I'll just give you one example. When I first joined Citi, that was in 2007. So I had one really good year before the financial crisis happened in 2008. But during that time, we brought a lot of the fashion designers onto the platform because we helped them with managing risk in their portfolios and in their clients, in their business, right? In the client business portfolios as well. So I give you an example. We did a lot of foreign exchange strategies and hedging. And as you can imagine, that made a world of difference for fashion designers that deal in multiple currencies and multiple geographies around the world. It really helped them maintain their margins. And they were so grateful as we navigated through the financial crisis. So having that sort of different angle, you know, knowing the, how operating a business works, I think is incredibly important. I think that, as I said, you know, starting with the financial valuation, really understanding the inner workings of a company, when it makes sense to buy, sell, you know, divest, to go public, and then looking at it from running, owning, operating perspective to a now wealth management, which I think everybody really needs. But one thing I will say about myself in terms of leadership, one of the things that I always say is my superpower, Darren, is my ability to listen incredibly well.
Super important when dealing with families. Really super important in business always. So let's use that as a segue into the topic I want to really focus on, which is succession planning in ultra high net worth families. And in your role in Citi, you've seen it all. You've probably been part of it all. How do you, what role do you take? Do you play in the succession process? And what are some of the lessons that you've learned?
So we play a critical role with our clients and their families. And in fact, I always say to our teams that we're striving to be the number one private bank for families, not just individuals, but making sure that we're providing a comprehensive solution for the spouses, the partners, the kids, the grandkids, and ensuring that continuity. And one of the most important things is that sort of family intergenerational success and wealth planning that is a critical component to our business, right? So it's making sure that we understand our family's goals, objectives, what they want to do for their kids, for their grandkids, what they want their impact to be, what they want their legacy to be. Are they philanthropically inclined, Darren? Can we help you set up a foundation that makes sense for you? Set up the investment guidelines and policy statements. Make sure that we're finding you and matching you with the right opportunities that match your wishes and your desires. You know, so those are all elements of the wealth planning side of the business, which is absolutely critical. It's something that every family needs. You know, they need to think very carefully about that and how to maximize the wealth transfer to their kids, to their grandkids. And on top of that is another part of the family component that's important. And in many cases, it's, you know, how do you want your children to be engaged? Are they engaged? Are they going to be a part of your family business? Are they not? You know, there's a lot of nuances there that we also help our families with. And Darren, you know that, having attended our family office conference in DC last year, as you mentioned, you see the types of advice that we offer to families to consider all of these different elements of succession and business planning and next generation and future generations of success. And that's what we're here to do, is to educate, to help, to advocate, and to help set up a structure and a governance structure that makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Now, when you are looking at a family succession question, there are lots of stakeholders around the table. As you say, spouses, children, sometimes grandchildren. Obviously, then there's the professionals, trustees, etc. I want to zone in on one area, which is the role that women play and women leadership provide in that context. And what have you seen is the unique, you use the word superpower, the unique superpower that that can bring to the discussion?
Well, Darren, I think that bringing different perspectives always adds color and always adds important insights into every conversation, right? If we all were the same, you'd get the same views, the same results, the same of everything, right? And when you add a bit of different perspectives to the table, you get new ideas, you get innovative ideas, you get ideas outside of the box. And I, as you know, feel very strongly about this, because at Citi, we value very much our diversity and inclusion at all ranks. As you can see, we've broken the glass ceiling here at Citi with our first female CEO of a global financial institution, Jean Fraser. Yeah. And so when you ask me specifically about what do they bring to the table? Well, we bring a different perspective, clearly. But I think the diversity angle also adds a lot of innovation, different thinking, challenging of status quo. And I will say that particularly in these last few years around COVID, we've all had to lead a bit differently, Darren, as I'm sure you're accustomed to as well. You know, we've had to really tilt in and lean in on the EQ side of the equation, because we're only as good as the people that work with us, right? Yeah. And we've got to make sure that we are surrounding them with as much care and support as possible. And during this very challenging times of COVID, we leaned in on that substantially, Darren. And we brought in, for example, in my leadership team meetings, we used to talk all about strategy and numbers and direction and financials. And we started to take a step back and talk about health and wellness. We brought in a Buddhist monk to do guided meditation. We brought in a nutritionist to talk about eating for energy. We brought a doctor in to talk about the importance of exercise and well-being and sleep, because we wanted to coach our people, our team, to get through a very challenging period of time and be the best that they can be to continue to contribute to the business, right, in the most optimal way. So a long-winded way of saying, Darren, that multiple perspectives are always good. Women tend to lead, I hope, and more broadly too, with a lot of EQ. You know, I think bringing those elements into the table, particularly in challenging times, we have to lead a little bit differently, focus on the health and wellness of our team, provide different types of support, I think is incredibly important, because it's all about morale, right? It's all about morale, teamwork, making sure that folks around you, in your family and around you, are feeling that.
Yeah. For sure. How do you make sure that in a process like that, but really in any process, but particularly in one that's sensitive, complex, and sometimes, you know, I've seen succession processes that have taken years, you know, until you get everybody around the table. I'm sure you have as well. How do you make sure that everybody gets a voice? You know, what best practices are you able to implement to make sure, regardless of gender, you know, or status in the family, everybody gets to be heard and their views considered in a succession process?
Yeah, I think the most successful family succession processes have a lot of open communication and honest dialogue. It is bringing everybody to the table, understanding what everybody's objectives are, because many family members may not, Darren, want to be in business. Some may want to, right? So understanding the objectives, who wants to be in it, who doesn't want to be in it, what are the strengths, what are the weaknesses, where do we see all of the different family members, in what kinds of roles, having open dialogue around that so you're not mismanaging any kind of expectations. The communications and the dialogues are super clear I think family governance is incredibly important. I know most of the very successful families that are multi-generational families have family meetings on a very regular basis where everybody gather around the table and they have open and honest dialogues. I've even had instances where they've had a family psychologist join over the years. And, you know, it may sound unusual for some, but it for others, it's incredible to have a moderator, so to speak. It doesn't have to be a psychologist. It can be, as that works well for some, but to have some sort of a moderator to be able, to your point, to make sure that we're drawing out all of the relevant viewpoints, discussion items, and that everybody has been heard and is it exhaustively heard, so that nothing is left on the table for questions.
Right, right. And try and avoid dictatorship by, you know, the first gen, the wealth creator, and try and get everybody to express their frustrations without fear or embarrassment.
Absolutely. That's the key.
Yeah. Okay. Citi reported that back in 2021, you saw a spike in the number of female clients. And I think you reported that 27% of your clients are now female. Explain that.
Well, Darren, when I took over as the global head of the private bank just over a couple of years ago, the first thing I did was I wanted to make sure that we were, as I mentioned earlier, the number one private bank for families. So it wasn't just about a single relationship. It was about making sure we had the spouse, the kids, the grandkids, and the like. And part of that was including a lot of our female clients as well that we didn't traditionally have. That coupled with the fact that there's so much growth in female wealth. I mean, women control over, you know, a third of the world's wealth today. They make 70% of most of the household consumption decisions. And it's a very important demographic, and women are not to be ignored, not to be ignored.
We don't have to say that, but yet we do, right?
We do. And so, you know, logically for us, we wanted to make sure that we were also viewed as one of the best and most important wealth partners to women clients around the world as well, right? So we saw that as a enormous opportunity. And I think the difference between historically wealth management, private banking for women and men is that sometimes women, and this is an overgeneralization, but need a little bit more on the educational side of the financial process. And that's totally fine. And we have to be aware of differences and make sure that we're training and that we're providing a space that women feel comfortable, you know, asking questions, talking about their vulnerabilities, you know, making sure that they don't feel intimidated to share with us. Well, listen, I really don't understand that. Please tell me, please explain. And I've also hosted monthly women's luncheons where we've created a phenomenal group of women that is now what we call it, just a really wonderful network, right? Where they can feel safe talking with one another, really sharing what's happening, even in their leadership journeys and in their businesses, but also on the private banking and wealth management side. So it's been very rewarding for me personally.
Fantastic.
It's been wonderful.
Wonderful. And do you see the same dynamic play out with the younger generations? So, you know, as you know, people come up within families, you know, they get older, they start to become more aware. What best practices have you seen in helping families, apart from the openness and, you know, sharing information with younger family members is often challenging, right?
Yeah, it can be, but with the family approach that we've taken, we're doing a lot also for the next gen and the millennial clients and family members. One, we're making sure that we're providing the right type of training and educational opportunities to get them well ingrained early on. So we do a series of educational programs with the top institutions around the world. And in fact, I'm hosting one in June with MIT and a series of our next gen clients there. But on top of the education, we've also created a networking capability and an educational platform that we call Citi Latitude. And that's our ability for the next gen of millennials to access a wealth of information, not just about markets, although we have plenty of market views, investment outlooks, and how to invest in there. We also have individuals come. Some are clients, some are outside professors, some are inspirational speakers come and speak to this group every month and share a different type of a lesson, whether it's a leadership lesson, you know, the key to happiness, how to be a great leader, you know, all these different things that we explore with them. So it's more than just financial education, and they love that. Right. And the part of that is the element of the network that they're forming. So our goal here is to make sure we're getting in early, we're helping our families, right, with the education, with all different types of support to their next gen and millennial family members. And we're getting them very much involved with the process, right? And right. I think education, as you know, Darren, is so incredibly important, right? Knowing what you're about to inherit, understanding the responsibilities that you're going to have, understanding business succession issues and considerations are very important, because you're going in eyes wide open rather than, wow, what? Sure. What did I just inherit?
Yeah, oh, exactly.
How much do I have? What do I do with it? That's where bad behaviors happen, actually.
Right. We actually have a term for it. We call the OSM. It's the
what?
The OSM, the oh shit moment, which what? Is like, it's just like, I got what? I have to do what? Nobody prepared me for this.
Exactly.
Yeah. And look, you know, also going back to making, you know, creating safe spaces for people to ask questions, so that when they get to that, when they get there, they've had the time and they've been given the ability to ask the questions and have them answered.
And Darren, we have something called the Business Family Summit too that we do with Harvard. And we bring all the top family members around the world together. And this is multi-generations. I mean, we've had somewhere there's, you know, three generations of family members coming together. And this is all about sharing best practices, multi-generational business, family transfers and the like. How do you work together well? What kind of governance structures work well? How do you ensure success over the generations? Because as you know, it's very challenging after Gen 2. And by Gen 3, in many cases, you don't always have, you know, a highly sort of cohesive, successful family unit for the business going forward.
Of course.
From the success. But now that's changing. I think we're learning a lot from the families that do it very well. And we're trying to help educating and increasing awareness with other families too.
Right. And you are head of global business. Do you see big differences culturally between different parts of the world where Citi operates when it comes to attitudes towards succession, attitudes towards gender, attitudes towards children?
Of course, Darren.
That was a layup question.
Of course, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in Israel next week, where cultures are very different. Very different all over the world. I mean, look, I think we're very fortunate. I'm sitting in New York City today, and we're very fortunate to have such a diverse, as I mentioned earlier, such a diverse company and such a diverse perspective here in the city. It's a melting pot with all different types of culture, people, languages spoken. And I love that. That's what I think makes us so special as a city and as a company. You know, there are other parts, as you well know, around the world that are not as supportive of women or women's rights, which is, you know, always challenging. And then, of course, there are other parts of the world that have different views on business succession and planning. I mean, many countries, it's expected. There is no choice.
What?
And so, you know, I was talking to you earlier about everybody get around the table. You tell us what you want to do and you tell us what you want to do. That's in an ideal world.
Right.
There's many.
The rubber meets the road.
Where it's expected, you know, you are born into this family and you are expected to run and take over the company, whether you like it or not.
Right.
And that's, of course, then where I think you see a lot more of the failures in that second and third generation when you're forced versus what's something that you love to do or that you're passionate about. And so, yes, there's definitely nuances, cultural nuances everywhere. I mean, we have different language, everything, right? But that's what makes my job so incredibly fun and rewarding.
And challenging, yeah.
Well, no, I love it. I love it. You know, I love meeting all of our clients from around the world. I love visiting the different countries, seeing the different cultures. I love the different languages, you know, and it's really incredible. It's a really rewarding experience to see how all of these diverse perspectives come together. It's really incredible.
Right. Inevitably, in families, there are children who more inclined towards business, more inclined towards finance. And they will have siblings who are more inclined towards art or nursing or architecture or something else. How have you seen successful families deal with the inevitable tension and the inevitable stress that comes among siblings as you move into the next generation? Because, you know, it's a huge challenge. There's no way around it.
No, you're right, Darren. And that goes back to the point that I was making earlier about that importance of the communication and truly understanding what your children want to do, what they're good at, and embracing that, right? Rather than forcing it. And I think if you embrace it, there is not much tension, right? I mean, everybody's okay. They don't like us. They want to be an artist, fantastic. You know, they want to run the family business, fantastic.
Right.
So I think you have to be understanding about that. And back to my point about in some cases, that's not always an option for the next generation who are very artistic, but are forced to be into business. And that's where we see, you know, some issues that may happen right down the road in terms of just the long-term commitment to the success. Yeah. If your heart's not in it, you don't love it, it's not what you're passionate about, you really have to question.
Yeah,
you
know, I years ago, I met a guy who ran this magnificently successful company, which he inherited from his dad. He was, I think, the only son. And he turned what was a really nice business into an incredible business. And he turned around and said, but I really wanted to be an architect. And it was just, it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking. And you know, he'd done what he had to do. But, mm-hmm. you know, in some ways he managed to lose himself. But yeah, it is important to make sure that, you know, you give people room to follow their dreams. I want to now just sort of pivot a little away from succession, because, you know, I can't have you on the podcast without talking about the moment that we're all living through right now where, you know, we have inflation, which is still here. It's still at 5%. We have recession, maybe looming, maybe not looming, probably looming, depends on who you ask. And of course, a lot of geopolitical uncertainty. How has that influenced your decision-making as a bank and as advisor to families?
So Darren, first and foremost, we are fiduciary strategic asset managers for our clients, right? So at the end of the day, our jobs are to manage risk in our clients' portfolio, try to reduce risk while maintaining or increasing the returns. At the start of last year, we did many different things for our clients already, right? First, we started to do some hedging, continuation of interest rate hedging from the prior year. But at the start of last year, we did more interest rate hedging, which turned out to be a great thing for a lot of our clients that had floating obligations, right? To be able to fix them at such low rates back then before our 7 rate hikes last year. The second thing that we did is we pivoted a lot of cash into fixed income and short-term fixed income. And that's something that we're still doing right now. As you're mm-hmm. seeing yields, even on treasuries approaching 5%, it is very, very attractive. As a cash alternative at the moment to look at treasuries, short-term enhanced liquidity, municipals, and even preferreds now, you know, in some cases that are yielding 7-8%. So yeah. There's some opportunity in the marketplace today that are very compelling and very interesting. Some industries that we really like that are going to be ripe for growth in the long term, despite a potential recession in this quarter or the next quarter. We do think that there are certain industries that are very compelling and continue to be very compelling, and that is the whole deep tech, AI, cyber, you know, robotics space, where we think there's so much growth. I mean, Darren, if I speak with our CEOs around the world and I ask them, what's your top three, you know, where are you focused? One of the top three is always going to be cyber, and the amount of spending that coming into that industry is only going to increase. And then when you think about all of these advancements in digitization, they're all being driven by the brains of all of it, which is semiconductors. So there's some industries that we think are going to be ripe for growth and continued growth over the next decade plus. That's one of them. Another one is healthcare. Darren, we've lived through COVID. We've seen how quickly the drug discovery is happening these days. That's just one small example of some of the disruptive things that are happening in the healthcare industry. There's personalized medicine, telemedicine, all sorts of really interesting and compelling plays there. And with, you know, a third of the world's population over the age of 65, there's a huge consumption story there as well. And when you think about healthcare being sort of counter-cyclical because of the large pharma companies, et cetera, that have very large cash flowing and very high dividends, those tend to be good companies and industries to think about when you're in this type of sort of cyclical, recessionary type of environment. And then the third piece I would say is the transition from fossil fuels to clean energy. That's here to stay. It's going to happen. It's going to continue to happen. The companies that will benefit from this transition are the clean energy technology companies, the battery companies, the EV companies, and the like, that are still going to be, you know, ripe for growth in the years to come. So I would say just a few industry ideas that we're enacting in our clients' portfolios right now. You know, we do think we are going to reach peak rates in the U.S. this year. And at some point, we think in the second half, we'll start to see some hopeful easing on that side, in which case, we do expect somewhat of a rebound in the equity markets. So right now we're buckled down. We're doing fixed income. We're doing some of these strategic shifts in our clients' portfolios. We're adding private equity because I think there's a lot of opportunities with some of the market corrections for private equity managers. And we're going to make a shift very soon to going back into the equity market once we see sort of the throes of the recession.
Okay. So it sounds like sort of a mix between some medium-term tactical shifting and some we've got to look through this and keep to the big themes that are going to drive the economy for the next 5 or 10 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we do think there's going to be a rebound, right? So you just want to make sure you're not sitting on the sidelines too long.
Right.
It's the run up there, and we'll be advising our clients on that.
Fantastic. That's been amazing, really. I was really excited to have you on the podcast, and you certainly have not disappointed. It's really
thank
been great,
you.
And we'd love to have you back on another time.
Hopefully, thank you very much. Next time in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, indeed, we'll do this face to face. We'll do it on the beach. The beach is really beautiful.
Perfect, Darren. Such a pleasure. So nice.
Thanks
to see
so much,
you.
And thanks everybody. And thanks everyone for listening. And thanks Ida. And look out for more podcasts coming your way soon. Bye bye.
Thank you.